There we go. Power, great, yeah, all right. Let's see here. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're glad you're all here, especially newcomers. In keeping with our signalness of purpose and our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. If you please help me open this meeting with a moment of silent meditation to be used as you see fit, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And I've asked Peter to read how it works.
Thank you, Roy. I'm Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness of our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably No human power could have relieved our alcoholism and see that God could and would if he were sought. Thank you.
Yeah, and Alex is going to read the promises for us.
Thank you, Roy. Hi, everyone. My name is Alex. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. And these are the promises. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor want to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And finally, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. let's see. Okay. We'd like to welcome anybody attending their first AA meeting this evening. If we have anyone here that's new, would you raise your hand, give us your first name so we can get to know you? Any new people tonight? Okay, do we have any visitors or people from out of town or other groups that'd like to be recognized? Yeah.
My name's Tony. I'm from Hall of the State Polis.
Hi, Tony. Welcome. Anybody else? Okay, I reckon we're all old-timers here. Let's see. As I said, my name is Roy, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is a speaker's meeting, so I'm not going to tell you a whole lot about me. We're going to listen to somebody who's got a whole lot more to say than I do. But my sobriety date is April 7th, 1982, and that's somewhat of a miracle that a guy like me could still be sober today after all this time. There's been a lot of sober experiences, I can tell you that, along the way. And one of the things that the guy's speaking tonight, he oftentimes has said that the only difference between me and somebody else or him and anybody else was the sober experiences that they've had. And I believe that's true. You know, nobody's any more sober than anybody else, and the first guy that got up today is the one who's got the most sobriety. So I've learned a lot of things from Bill like that. I don't know if you'll say any of these famous things that he says, but I remember, I don't know why, lately, the one I've been thinking of is, he said, this has been a long time ago, that old Jackson Street, but he was back then saying something to the effect that if you get off the path, there's a bear in the woods, and he'll tear your ass up, you know. You know, great things like that. Anyway, I understand today, you know, I know what that's all about. And anyway, he's a special guy, and I've heard him speak before. And the other day, we have a friend of ours here who's leaving, left this area, and he's got, I think, 18 years now. I believe he's on the board up there this month, Jack G. And anyway, he was saying that his message in the meeting is he was saying that we should listen to the old-timers. And he was trying to say how important that is. And I know in my sobriety, in my recovery, it was really very important for me because I got the real message there. At one point in sobriety, I went to a retreat that Clarence Snyder, he's deceased now, but he was one of the first ones in AA. And I was going to downtown Jackson Street at the time, and the people that he had there were all back in the beginning, you know, right in the very beginning. And I was amazed by the fact that they said, these old-timers said the same exact things that I heard in Jackson Street, you know. And, I mean, it was a spiritual experience for me to know that the message had been passed on 40-some years, unadulterated, changed, and all that, you know. In other words, I'd heard the right thing in Orlando, Florida, and it was confirmed, you know, from these original people. And anyway, Bill has a good story and a great message, and he's one of our old-timers. And if you would help me welcome Bill O.
Thank you, Roy. You reminded me of something in your little talk there for a minute or two in that top. This old farmer went to a dairy auction. And the auctioneer knew him. He says, "Hey, John, you ought to buy that cow. She'll give you 40 pounds of milk a day." John looked over a little more, and he bid on her, you know. And he looked over some more, and he said, "Wait a minute, Henry. I don't want to bid on that cow." He said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Hell, she's blind." He said, "Do you want her to read or give milk?" I don't mean that to be funny. Ben Franklin said it better. He said, "Don't ever try to chase two rabbits with one dog." My point being, and that's why he enlightened me to it or turned me on to it, was that we only got alcoholism here. That's the only thing I know about. And that's been his concentration and mine, too, since I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've only been interested in what the cow could do. I don't give a damn whether she could read or not. I've only been interested in the program. I'm awful dumb about a lot of things. You know, they're not related to the program. People come talk to me about them. I give them that dumb look of mine, which my wife says is easy enough for me to do. And they seem to think I should know something about it. I don't know anything about it. I know about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the grace that's been put in my life since I crawled out of that jail on Old Colonial Avenue out of here and came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I like to talk about. I get into some meetings and I wonder, really, where in the hell I'm at, you know, because I hear of people with go to Emphysema Anonymous and Incest Anonymous, and my God, I don't know what all, you know. I hear some of these things in the room. I was at a meeting not too long ago in ODAP, and they're talking about some guy stole his lawnmower. And you can imagine what that meeting ended up with before it got around the room. Anyhow, I like to concentrate on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's the one thing I know about, and it's the only thing I feel qualified to talk about. And I don't always feel qualified to talk about all the areas of that. My name is Bill Oakley. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date, July 70, and that's for the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am delighted to be here this evening. I'd like to say something about the Al-Anons, too. There's probably one or two of you here in this room. You can't hardly tell them. You can't smell them. But anyhow, I would like to tell you all that it's been my experience, and that's what I'd like to talk about, my experience, that those people who have that are in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and have a spouse that's in their own recovery program, things just seem to go a lot better. Both people seem to mature and ripen and enrich their lives a lot more, where if there's just one struggling by himself and the mate is opposed, or maybe not opposed, but just doesn't take any interest in the program, it gives them something to, a common ground on which to walk, on which to grow, too. And it just seems to me like they're a lot more successful and seem to enjoy the program. Both of them seem to enjoy the programs a lot more as a result of that. There's a lot of stories about Al-Anons, and the only one that I know of is this old gal had trouble getting Henry sober, you know. And so she passed the bulletin board in church, and it said Al-Anon. She didn't know what it was, so she stopped there and read, and it said a Tuesday night meeting or something. So she went. She went to two or three of them, and they ain't ever told her how to get Henry sober. So finally she stopped this one old gal and told her about Henry and what an awful drunk he was, and says, "I got to do something and get him sober, and y'all aren't telling me how to do that." She said, "Well, we don't do that here." She said, "Well, what'd you do about your husband?" She said, "Well, the only thing that worked for my husband is I told him my mother was coming to live with us." And she says, "Oh, hell, Henry chased my mother off years ago. She won't even come near the house." But she says, "Well, maybe you can frighten him with something else." So she got to thinking about that. And on the way home, she passed one of these costume stores. And sure enough, there was a costume of a devil in there. And she thought, "By God, that might work." So she went in there and rented the devil's costume and all and laid there in the bushes. So old Henry come home about half bloated up, you know, and making all them animal noises and all. And in the bushes, you know, and here come Henry. So she jumped out and, "Yay!" And old Henry jumped back and says, "Who in the hell are you?" She says, "I'm the devil." She says, "Put her there, partner. Been wanting to meet you ever since I married your sister." No, don't you Al-Anons fall for that. I love you. I really do. Yeah. I don't think we'd be near the place we're at in our own recovery programs if it wasn't for Al-Anon. In the early days and the support they got from them people. Really do like you. I better get drunk here so I can get sober right quick, like. I said that the other night at a dinner over at Tampa. An old boy in the back room says, hell, I thought he was drunk. My drinking story might be a little different from some of yours. Might not. But the purpose of this meeting is, of course, is a thing of identity. You're supposed to... I'm like John the Indian. You know, John was a illiterate Indian from upstate New York, and he was sleeping in an abandoned house with just an old dog and didn't have no windows or doors or anything like that in. He says the only thing he remembered about that last drunk he's on, he had to crawl over that old dog to get to the door to puke out the door. He didn't want the house stinking up so much. So they finally got him to AA, and it was a speaker meeting, and Lord God, when he looked up there, it was a local judge. And she had sentenced him to jail more times than he could count. She came from one of the most richest families in town and all that. And John told him, he says, I can't do anything here. He says, hell, she sentenced me more. How am I going to identify? She said, shut up, just identify. John kept complaining all through her talk because she lived up on the hill, you know, and come from money and all that sort of thing. He says, I can't identify with her. And then finally she got rolled out of bed one night and she had to grab a hold of the carpet to get over to the bathroom to puke. John identified. So that's what you're here for tonight, is to identify. You can crucify me later on. I was raised in a little old town of Lexington, Kentucky. Incidentally, I'm a periodic alcoholic. There's some of you in this room, we don't talk about that too much. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it, though. It says there's many of us who think after a period of not drinking, we can drink with impunity. And I'm one of them people, and there's a lot more of you in this room. I figure it's about 40%. Of the alcoholics at some time or another were periodic. Sometimes they go into being continuous drunks. But we have the ability, I don't know whether it's a blessing or not either. Clarence Snyder, the same one that Roy mentioned, was member number 41. He says we're the ones that gave drinking a bad name. But we do. We have that ability to go into periods of self-imposed sobriety. A lot of mine was imposed by the local law officers. But anyhow, we go into these periods of sobriety, or just not drinking, really, for extended periods of time, and we're able to put it all back together. You know, we go to work, and we show up on time, we bring the money home, the dog's happy, the wife's happy, the boss is happy, everybody's happy but me, and I'm like the book says, I'm discontented with things. They're just not my way, and sooner or later, I'm getting so discontented, I'm going to drink again. But in the interim, I keep everybody on needles and pins wondering when it's going to happen again. See, the old continuous drunk, he drinks every day. He stays about that high off the ground all the time. People know what to expect of him. But of the periodic alcoholic, this is not true. We're terribly hard on families, and especially children, also bosses. But then we can go back into one of these periods after going on a spree for a weekend or so and put it all back together, go to work again, you know, bring them up, do the same thing over and over and over again. I think we're absolutely more insane. I have to agree with Clarence in that we are more insane than the continuous drunk, because we know simply by not drinking, things get better. You know, we don't go to jail, we don't wreck cars, we don't do a lot of these other things that we normally do. So we have that. It doesn't improve all areas of our life, but we are aware of that. Yet we'll drink knowing full well of the circumstances and all. So that's the kind of alcoholic I am. I was raised in a little town in Lexington, Kentucky, poor folks. I guess that's about all I can say about that. Everybody else was poor at the same time. It didn't make much difference. And I was a very poor student. I quit school when I was about 7 years old, or in seventh grade, rather. And I went to work in a local stockyard. The wintertime, I was ill-clothed and ill-shod for that kind of work. Never had worked around stock before and was scared to death. They handed me a big old hickory cane. I didn't know what the hell to do with that. And all these hogs would come charging towards me, and I was supposed to open this gate and all. I don't know what was going on. And hogs are strange. When they get excited, they do a lot of things that they normally don't do, you know. And I'm standing in all that all awful stuff, and I'm miserable and cold. And this old farmer, he sensed my predicament. And he came over there, and he reached down in them bib overalls, and he pulled out that bottle of whiskey, and he says, here, boy. He says, take yourself a drink of this, and you'll be all right. And I did, and Lord God, did he tell the truth. Lord God, did he tell the truth. It did everything a drink is supposed to do for an alcoholic. It went to every part of my body. Right away. Just flushed right on through me, you know. I wasn't no longer cold. Wasn't scared. Had 10 cents in my pocket. It became $10. I didn't care what I was standing in anymore. It didn't make any difference. And the next hog that came by, I just took that cane, knocked the hell out of him, and showed him I'd do it. And my golden moment was born. The golden moment that I was to chase for the next 25 or 30 years of my life. Always trying to recapture that moment when I no longer knew fear, when everything was all right in my life, when 10 cents became $10, and I even became prettier. Always trying to recapture that moment, but never able to, knowing full well now that it was an illusion anyhow. But from that day forward, any time that golden moment came to Bill Oakley's mind, he was destined to drink. Don't tell me about circumstances and situations or consequences. Damn. I would be destined to drink when that golden moment came to my mind. I went into World War II. It was still going on at that time. If you had two arms and two legs, it was the right thing to be in the military, and I was coming of age, so I went in. Didn't have any problem. It might have been the newness. It might have been the regimentation. I don't know, but I had no problem with booze for the year and a half or so I was in. I was in the Army. I learned one thing. I didn't want to be all I could be. So when they offered me the opportunity to get out, I took it. The next 5 years, I spent on all the major skids on the East Coast and learned all the things you learn from that kind of life, how to knock somebody in the head and how to get knocked in the head and how to go to jail and how to sing for your supper and a mission and how to mix a pink lady and a green lizard and all that San Francisco circles and the whole smear of that rotten way of life. And it only took 5 years. I don't know how many times I went to jail during that time. I still don't know how many times I've been in jail. But in any event, I came to in a car in Detroit. I was sleeping in an abandoned car, evidently. And I saw a sign that says, Uncle Sam wants you. So I went back in the military. This time I went into the Air Force, though the Korean thing was about to get started. But see, the tragic part about all this is that I took me with me. I took me with all my alcoholism and with my golden moment. I made 11 stripes during the Korean War and kept 4 of them. You see, every time I would sober up or go into one of these periods of self-imposed sobriety, not drinking, let's call it that, that's what it really is, you can call it sobriety. But anyhow, I would go without drink and get promoted. When that golden moment would come on, don't tell me there's a damn war going on, I don't want to hear that. But when that golden moment would come on, I was destined to drink again, I'd get busted. It was just that simple. So that's the way my life went. I finally, the war was over, they sent us home. I'm 27 years old, a full-blown blackout drinker. And if you're a blackout drinker, don't question your alcoholism, you is. And I thought I'd done everything, you know, up until that time. If you're 27 years old and an alcoholic, you know this, that's everything. You know, you can ask any kind of question, we'll have some kind of answer for it. And that's exactly where I was at in life. But there was this little nagging thing that said there was something that needed to be done to fulfill my life a little more. And from somewhere in the depths of this insane thing up here, it said, perhaps you ought to get married, Bill. Why in God's name an alcoholic thinks that marriage is going to be the answer to his problem, I don't know. Unless, of course, it's sobriety through sex. I found a girl down in Kentucky who had 2 wee children, and we got married, and nothing happened for about a year or so there. Again, it might have been the newness of it, the regimentation or whatever, but anyhow, I had no problem. The golden moment didn't bother me a lot. I had a few episodes, but nothing serious. I finished that tour up and was to re-enlist, and I was accepted for an assignment on 36th Street in Miami. Three-year stabilized tour right on 36th Street. And I went there, and the golden moment bothered me from the time I got there, it seemed like. She was stayed in Kentucky. A child was born to that union. She was to come down and join us later. And to show you where that golden moment and how powerful it was in my life at that particular time, I was awakened one morning by a runner. He came up, and he says, I don't know how long I have since I've been home. I hadn't even thought about that. But this runner came up, and he says, Sarge, he says, your wife's downstairs, and she'd like to see you. Well, I was in my wardrobe, so I just had to roll off of the empty bed I was sleeping on. I went down there, and here was this lovely lady with 3 children in a car leveled out with baggage and all. And she looked out that window of me, and she says, Bill, we're going home to Mother. And that golden moment came on, and I says, have a good trip. And I turned and walked to that NCO club just like I was dispersing with somebody that had nothing to do with my life. There wasn't one thought of me inside of me at that time. Can there be some reconciliation? Can we do something about this thing? Can I'll try to change? Do you have enough money? Is the car running right?
Have a nice trip. And I turned around and walked away to answer the demands of that golden moment. That continued throughout my career, and especially one more incident that happened in Miami. We only had to work 2 days a month down there. That was to train reservists. That was the sole responsibility that we had. And for a drunk, you can imagine what that was. I had an extra job tending bar. But I took a bust in Miami. Failure to repair. That means I didn't show up for work one day. I knew full well the consequences of this. Every man on that base knew that those 2 days were imperative. Unless there was some kind of death or some kind of an emergency in the family, you showed up for work those on that weekend. I knew that. Every man knew that. It was given to us from the day we walked into. We were told it was the country club, but by God, we'd be there for those 2 days, and we knew the consequences of it, and I knew it. But you see, when that golden moment came on, it was more important than that job. As a consequence of that, I paid $55 a month for 6 years for that drink of alcohol. But you see, it was still more important. The beautiful part about being in the military is that it always provided me with that opportunity to transfer and start anew. And sure enough, I finally finished up in Miami with 3.5 years. I was damn near dead. And I was to go to the Isle of Crete, right off the coast of Greece. And new assignment, new start. Everything's going to be okay this time, you know. Forgetting and not knowing that I was taking me with me. I arrived at Crete 18 days late. Well, it's a long ways over there, but not when you're flying, and they took a very dim view of that. I'd not only been in Bermuda and in the Azores, I was in 3 countries in North Africa, Sicily, Italy, Athens. And so by the time I got there, instead of having this beautiful opportunity to start anew, I was in deep doo-doo. Here's what's the baffling part about the alcoholic. Here's the reason why you should never try to explain your alcoholism to somebody that ain't got it. It's always going to be a case of the misinformed talking to the misunderstood. You'll drive yourself nuts trying to do that. Don't even try to do it. But in any event, for the next 18 months, with the keys to the NCO club in my pocket, could have had a drink around the clock when it cost me a dime, didn't touch a drop. Sent all my money home. In fact, I sent more money home because I was making extra money for running the NCO club. Imagine what's going on at home. The first 30 days, she said, no, he's done this before. But then it was 60 days. Then it was 90 days. You could see it and hear it in her letters, the hope and all. Then it was 6 months. Remember, all the birthdays were remembered. You know, the Christmases, the New Year's, even my mother-in-law's, you know, everything. Just like, you know, alcoholics want to be rewarded for not robbing the bank. And that's what I felt at this time. Here I'm doing all these great things. Hell, I was doing what a husband was supposed to be doing, that's all. But this 18 months are up. And I returned to Kentucky. And I really don't have any golden moment drinking, to tell you the truth. It was very mild for me. But 27 days later, I'm in Straps at Shaw Air Force Base, South Carolina. And I stay in Straps that time for 9 days in a wheelchair for 2 weeks and 30 more days before they could return me to duty. And I was absolutely baffled by it. I says, how in the hell can this happen? I was in excellent shape. I'd been working out on the beach, eating good and all that, and resting good. No drink at all, like I say, for 18 months. I couldn't understand it. How could I be in this shape again? I was baffled by it. I had to come to a room full of alcoholics to find out about it. The stuff progresses in me whether I drink it or not. I have no problem accepting the fact tonight that if Bill Oakley left here right now and went downtown and took a drink, by midnight he'd be in jail. No problem at all. I don't, if I lasted that long. The career went along like that. I'm always in deep doo-doo at one command or another. And so I was in serious trouble this time down in South Carolina. My only way out was to volunteer to go to NAM. And that shows you some more of my insanities. I volunteered. Anything was better than where I'm at. You know, that's always the story of an alcoholic. I don't care where you're at, something better over there, you know. I'd be in England, and I'd want to be in Scotland. And I'd be in Germany, and it's better in Belgium. Or, you know, always that way. So, anyhow, NAM didn't help me much because I took me with me in the golden moment. And sure enough, it came on over there. And sure enough, I ended up in another funny palace, one of the worst I've ever been in, because some of them kids were scared over there, and they certainly had a right to be scared from some of the things they had seen. Hell, I was just drunk. And I came to during a rocket attack over there, and I thought, what in the hell am I doing here? Because they're trying to get these kids strapped down, get needles in them, jackets on them, strapping them to beds and all that, you know. And here old drunk Oakley comes too. I thought, what the hell am I doing in here? And there was a major past my bed about that time. He says, you're here because, by God, you belong here. I thought, Lord, Lord, have I gotten to this place in life? Yeah, I belong there, ladies and gentlemen. I sure did. I finished up now. I came on home. I'm getting real short now. I went up to Selfridge Air Force Base, and they're just a few months, and they're going to retire me. And the golden moment is really bothering me now. I'm just, I'm almost a continuous drunk. I'm able to get off of it maybe for a day or two when things are real tough. But it's really a real pain for me. This worse than it ever been in my life. And I'm called in by my commander, a guy I used to work for years ago, and he was a colonel. I've known him for years. And this guy was known to be a man of his word. He's one of those kind of people. He told you he's going to do something, by God, he'd do it. And you knew that from this man, from being around him. And you knew the way he talked, the way he presented himself and everything. He was just that kind of person. And he called me in, and he told me about my behavior. And that it was entirely unacceptable as a sergeant in the United States Air Force. And he went on and chewed me out for about 5 or 10 minutes and told me what he was going to do to me if I didn't go back to my office and run it like a sergeant in the United States Air Force till the very day I was relieved of duty. If not, he said, I'll jerk them damn stripes off of your arm and kick you out of this man's Air Force. Do you understand me? Yes, Colonel. And I threw him a rather shaky highball and went out through his secretary's office. And that golden moment came on, and I got in that truck and drove straight off to that base as if that man hadn't spoken to me. You see, that golden moment was more important than that 19 years and six that I was willing to give for that drink of alcohol. Much more important than what that man had just told me. What I just had been informed of and what I knew. That golden moment was more powerful. And I spent the rest of that day in the barn just by the grace of God I wasn't caught. They went on and retired me. That little dumb girl I'd married 16 years before, she'd smartened up, and she also retired me about 16 days before the Air Force did. But you see, now I'm in the position I want to be in. Ask any alcoholic, what do you want? He says, man, I just want to be free. I just want to do my own damn thing. Then I take a drink of alcohol, and there goes my freedom. I'm in bondage right away. As soon as I take a drink, my freedom's gone. I had to come here to find out something about freedom. I came to Orlando, went into one of my periods of self-imposed sobriety, went to work, put some money together. Incidentally, if you think money's your problem, you're wrong. I thought it was, too, when I got here. But one evening, the conversation up here went something like this. I like shooting pool with these old boys. I've already paid the rent. I don't even need to see the landlord. I did the laundry yesterday. I can send next door to get some chicken. I don't know how long that drunk lasted. There's only one thing that's clear in my mind about that drunk. And that's when I came to on the corner of, I think it was Central, it might have been Pine, in Orange Avenue, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and tears are streaming down my face because I couldn't, for the love of God, tell you how to get off the curb. I didn't know whether I was to go up, whether it was to go down, a helicopter was to come and get me, whether the light was to turn purple, were they going to build a bridge for me. I could not tell you, for the love of God, how to get off of that curb. I was completely immobilized by the fear and paranoia brought on by extreme alcoholism. And to show you where my alcohol had taken me, when I was told in a jail that I'd been there for 5 days, I was delighted to realize that I had not been out on the street in that blackout. That I'd been in a jail where I was confined, where I couldn't hurt anybody or couldn't do anything to anyone else, including myself. That's where my life had finally gotten to. My success, really, was by being in that jail. I was delighted to find myself in that jail and to realize that I hadn't been out on the street. But 5 days had just gone out of my life, just like that. If you're a blackout drinker, you're in serious trouble with alcohol, ladies and gentlemen. You can do any damn thing. Anything. I have a beautiful tape by a doctor down in Texas that did a C-sectional. I was to do one on a lady, one of his patients, and he examined her that afternoon. She was scheduled the next morning or whenever, and then he went out like me and got drunk and came in the middle of the night and performed that C-sectional on that lady, or whatever C-sectional I think it's called. And then, of course, the next morning came in later still and raised hell with everybody because somebody messed with his patient. And everybody looked at him like he's a damn fool, which of course he was. Of course, somebody took him aside and said, Doctor, you were here at 3:30, 4 o'clock this morning and performed that operation. You can do anything in a blackout. Anything. Go to Rayford and make a lead sometime. See how many of them line up down there? 50 or 60 of them line up to thank you for coming up there and one thing and another. Say, yeah, man, that's what happened to me. I was in a blackout. Put a knife in that guy. I was in a blackout. Busted a chair over his head. In a blackout. You know, bum, bum, bum. Just one right after the other. If you're a blackout, you're in serious trouble with alcohol. And that's where I was. I finally, when I did come to and realize my predicament, I had to be told, I had 65 days, I think, of going. Which, that didn't bother me too much. But I had a little conversation with me that I'd never had before. Had all kinds of them. You know how a drunk goes around talking to yourself. Oh, that guy won the lottery. Boy, if I was him, I'd do this. And all, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it, anyhow, I got them birds up there too, and they always talk to each other. But this time there was a little more validity because it said something to me like this. For God's sake, Bill Oakley, quit telling yourself you can drink alcohol. It don't make any difference when you drink it, where you drink it, how much you drink even, what kinds you drink. When you drink, you get in trouble. Look at you. You're in another damn jail. Your life's a piece of garbage. You should be able to enjoy yourself. And look at you. For Christ's sake, quit telling yourself you can drink alcohol. You can't. God help me. I never want to be like this again in my life. I don't care what comes down. I never want to be like this again in my life. Please help me. Some damn fool walked up the jail cell. There's 16 of us in there. He pointed to me. And says, do you want to do something about your drinking problem? And I had that moment of truth, and I said, yes, sir, I do. And I reiterated that prayer silently. God help me. I never want to be like this again. And then this man and his partner, who's on that plaque up there, Ed Jellison, later become a sponsor, came and talked to me and others that would listen for the next 47 days I was in the slammer. And they told me some good things about what could happen to me. In fact, this, the one thing this man told me quite early, and I knew he was crazy when he said this, because he says, I tell you what, you come and join us and do the things that we tell you to do, I'll guarantee you the most exciting years of your life are going to lie ahead of you. And I thought, this old fool, I'd served in 3 wars, been drunk in 27 countries, had a couple of wives, and he's going to tell me what's exciting. He knew exactly what he was talking about. Exactly what he was talking about. The highlight of Bill Oakley's life up until this time is standing in a ballpark in Montreal, Seattle, or some of the other places that we've gathered, especially at internationals, where there's 45 and 50,000 drunks holding hands saying the Lord's Prayer. I get chills any time I want to think about it. I guarantee you the most exciting years of your life lie ahead of you if you're coming and work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But they won't be like you think they're going to be at all. I did as that man said. I came to the old Central Group when it was down on Jackson Street that Roy mentioned earlier. It was the wine old group. It was probably the group in town, to tell you the truth. There was other groups, Winter Park, Fairbanks, several others, but not too many. But Central was sort of the group. Winter Park was considered the silk sheet drunks. Everybody up there had cars and everything. And job. Yeah. So anyhow, I came into the Central group and looked around and thought, my God, what have I got myself into? Because you see, I've been 47 days on ochre and grits. And most of them in that meeting looked to me like they just crawled out from underneath the bushes, you know. I wasn't in much better shape, but I'd like to think I was, you know, as I looked around that room and judged everybody right quickly. I knew who would panhandle you right quick off, you know, and all that sort of thing. Oh, my God, how long. One guy had pegged. I says, he's been drinking Splow. You can tell by his voice. He just, you know, you can just tell him, it's a Splow drinker. He was a lawyer, been sober about 16 years. I don't guess he ever saw a glass of Splow in his life. But anyhow, that was my game. I was graced with this man right here, Ed Jellison. Get a sponsor. Get a dumb sponsor here, because they're all dumb. I know that. I've never seen a smart one yet, but get one anyhow. And for God's sakes, get one that's got one. If you don't, you're listening to two damn fools. But anyhow, I was graced with this man here, and I did the usual thing. I lied to him about where I was at and what I was doing and all those kind of things, you know. However, he believed, as I believe today, that our primary purpose is to get into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was read here tonight. If you want what we have and willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Who's that talking to? It's talking to the reader. That determines when you take the steps. As Clarence Snyder would say again, I was shocked the first time I ever heard him say this. This lady came up and says, well, when do I take the steps, Clarence? He says, when do you want to get sober? And I know the same thing. And that's what this gentleman did for me. I believe it's like this. Please pay attention to me, because my words get stretched around sometimes when I go to other meetings and sponsors call me up and say, what in the hell are you talking about, Oakley, and all this kind of thing. I believe it's sort of like getting baptized into the church. Now, I'm not saying get baptized into the church. I say it's sort of like that. When you get baptized, that's all it does. It just gets you into the church. It don't provide you with salvation. That's a long ways down the road. You've got to do a lot of things, probably teach Sunday school, study the Bible, go to hear the minister, and all this sort of thing. There's a lot of things between getting baptized and salvation. And that's the way it is here. When you come in here and take these steps, you've just gotten baptized. And it's a hell of a long ways down here till you're really sober. In fact, I think the only thing that any of us know out after any length of time around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is, one, you spend first 5 years getting sober. Then you try to learn to get the hell out of the way. And after that, you try to learn everything's going to be all right. That's all an old-timer ever knew anyhow. That's all this one knows. So, that's what I believe today. Come in and take the steps. That's all we have to offer. That's what was read, and that's exactly the way the big book says to do it. If you think I'm wrong, read page 13 of the big book. Bill took the steps while he was laying in a bed just coming out of DTs. Dr. Bob took them with a guy going to Chicago one afternoon in his office. So we don't have any evidence of this business of, well, I'm on the third step. How long you been here? 6 months? Let me tell you where you're at if you're on the third step. You've got just enough of God not to be crazy and just enough of AA not to be drunk. In other words, you got a nothing sandwich going for you. Because there's no way in God's name you can be on the third step. It's a decision. It either is or it ain't. And do you know when you've taken it? If you're working on the fourth step. It's exactly what the book says. It's no good at all unless immediately followed by house cleaning. The house cleaning starts with what? An inventory. When do you get a break? After you take the fifth step, it says go home, take this book down from the shelf, go through it and make sure you're on solid ground. So that's the only thing I know about this program. That's the only way I work. That's why a lot of people don't want me to sponsor them too. But I want you in a couple of weeks. My job as a sponsor is to become obsolete. That's my job. I really don't care if you speak to me or not after we go through these steps. That's not my place. My place is to offer you my experience in going through these steps. I might want to go and listen to your first talk and tell you what a lousy job you do and tell you how to chair a meeting or something like that. But my job is to take you through these steps as a sponsor. Those are the four S's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the four things that I'm really and truly interested in. That's the steps, the service, the sponsor, and the spiritual. I won't get into how they come and all. I can give you a three-hour dissertation on that. But I just know that these things are absolutely essential if you're going to become sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because let's look at it from this standpoint. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the final analysis, is really and truly about fulfilling your dreams. That's what this program's all about. You bring your dreams to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You bring your drunken dreams to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You get to this dumb sponsor we're talking with, and you go down this list and you throw out the garbage and you make an honest application of these 12 steps for the rest of that, and I'll guarantee you one of two or three things is going to happen to you. One, you're going to find out that you didn't need a Cadillac, you need a pickup truck to work out of. And two, you've been given much more than what you had on the list. It's just, I guarantee it. Come in. Bring your dreams to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that's how these things are fulfilled, is by working these steps. So you get this sponsor. And you go through these steps, as they're outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you get baptized, if you will, into the program. You don't concern yourself so much about how you're going to do it, how well you're going to do it, or anything. What? That's what he brought me. He didn't bring me any money. He didn't bring me any cigarettes. And when he came to talk to me each night, that's what he brought me. It was another message of hope. Him and this guy here. So we all got that responsibility. And you know full well, every one of you in this room, at your darkest hour someplace, somebody came along and said something to you and sort of turned a little light on, or made you feel a little better in here. Like this guy was robbing a safe, you know, had one of them little pen light. And he's working with the dial like this, and he hears a little voice, and the little voice says, Jesus sees you. Couldn't see anything, of course, no beam to the light or anything. He goes back to work on the safe, puts out some more, and says, Jesus doesn't like what you're doing. So he extends the light, and he still don't see anything. He goes back to the work on the safe, you know, and the little voice says, Jesus will punish you. So he stops, walks all the way around the room, and finally gets over here in the corner. And here's a little old green bird sitting on a perch. And he says, oh, hell, what could a little old green bird do? But his light fell away. There was a huge Doberman. And his teeth were blared and his ears were laid back. And the little voice says, sick him, Jesus. You have a little voice. You have the little voice. Every one of us has. If you don't remember anything else that I say tonight, I hope you will remember this, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about reasonable expectations, things that you and I can do. None of this is over any of your heads. I've been around here too long, seen a few too smart to get it, but this thing is about reasonable expectation. It's things that you and I can do. I don't care whether it's the steps or what it is to make some service job, any part of it. That book is written at, we don't have one, it's written at an 8th or a 9th grade level. Right, that's college level today, but that's where that book's written at. There's nothing in there that you and I can't do. The steps, there was an old man down at Central, and George is probably the only man here that knows this guy. Old man Bill, he was down there for years. He was a Harvard grad. And he slept upstairs and one thing and another. He's a nice old man, except he stayed on my ass all the time. And he sensed my predicament one time, and he says, come here, dummy. And I knew I was in trouble. He wasn't even sponsoring me, but he always knew what was wrong with me. And he says, I want to tell you what your problem is, and I want you to quit doing it. I said, okay, what's my problem? He says, You're thinking of these steps and this language and all that we use and give you around here in its absolute sense. You know, absolute love, absolute tolerance, absolute patience, absolute honesty. You know, you don't use those words in the streets and under the bridges and all. It's just, you know, they were completely foreign to me. And he realized this, and he knew I had an awful lot of fear of those words. How in the hell am I going to be absolutely honest? Absolute love. What the hell are you talking about, you know? He sensed this. And he told me, he said, let me explain something to you, dummy, and don't you ever forget it. We've introduced you to these words and all, probably some of them for the first time. And we want you to incorporate them into your life. We try to explain to you how they will go into your life. But they're on a scale. And that scale is from 1 to 10. And that 1 is over here where we introduce you to this way of life and use these words and these terms to improve your life. And the scale goes across, of course, and over here is 10, and that's that absolute love and that absolute tolerance and that absolute patience that you're so afraid of. He says, don't worry about it. It's reserved for sainthood, and you ain't going to get there. But from this day forward, you'll always be on that scale. Some days a 6, some days a 4. Always trying to improve, knowing full well you'll never become a 10. And that's the way you work the program, or that's the way I work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Any part of it, knowing full well I'm never going to do this thing perfect, but always striving to improve it just a little bit more. Roy said the magic word, though, when he started this evening. And I think this is the big thing. I went to the university out here, and one of my favorite professors, I went in and looked at some work one day. I says, good God, look at this talent.
know, I was just awed by all this beautiful work that was being done by these kids. And when this professor came in, I says, isn't this powerful? He said, what do you mean? I says, aren't you impressed with all this, doctor? And he says, oh, it's good. He says, there's a lot of talent here, Mr. Oakley. I said, well, you don't sound like it. And he said, well, the thing that concerns me that they lack is stick-to-itiveness. He says, they don't got it. And that's what I find in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We got enough stick-to-itiveness. The most tragic thing that happens to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we come in here and get what we came after. Yeah, that's the worst thing that can happen to us. We get our job back, our wife back, and this back, and get our car back, and driver's license all straightened out, teeth fixed, and the Timex, think we're well. And sure enough, I hope to God I never get it all. I hope to God I never get it all. That's stick-to-itiveness. Believe me, that's the biggest thing in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is to hang in there. Like I told you before, what's the old-timer know? He just knows that everything's going to be all right. And what does the winner do? He takes the extra step. He goes the extra mile. That's what makes a winner. Hanging in there. You got other words for it, but I can't think of a better than stick-to-itiveness. Good words. We're always concerned about the spiritual part of the program, and I don't know why. That is the program. But I'm quite sure I'm like you. I thought with all the crud that I brought here, the dirty person that I was, all the hideous things I'd done, the people I'd abused and caused such much harm to, that surely God didn't want anything. As soon as I got a little straight, though, I was going to see about doing this thing and really turning this over to God. Well, you see, it don't work that way. If I could have gotten a little straight, I would have. I wouldn't have been the person I was if I'd had any control over my life. But you see, I didn't. I can't make me that way. That's why you turn the whole bag over, the whole scuzz bag that it is, you turn it over to God just like it is. And He accepts you right there. Just come on in. I'm going to take care of you, dummy. Just do a few things. Just try to improve your life a little bit. Try to be a better person. Try not to cause so much harm. I'm going to take care of you. But it's so hard to do, and I think each year you learn a little more about how much more you've got to turn over. Because you come in here and you say, boy, I'll turn that drinking over. Hell yes. And sure enough, you don't drink for a while. And then you realize, Jesus, I better turn her over too. And then it's maybe the job, the tax situation. God, they got to do with the taxes and all, or the job or her. But as you go along, you find it's more and more has to be turned over. And I love you people. When I go to a meeting, they say, oh, I just turned it over to God. Well, prayer will never be a substitute for action. Let me assure you of that. We have a very dear friend that goes to one of our meetings, and he says that when people say that to him, he says, tell you what, the next time you get your electric bill, you take it in and you put it on the kitchen table there, you know. And then every night for 30 days, you just come in there and pray that the electric bill get paid. And each night you come in and do the same thing. And on the 31st day, you'll be sitting in the dark. Mm-hmm. Prayer's not a substitute for action. I see that all the time. Well, I prayed about it. Well, then do something about it. The two go hand in hand, you know. But that's one of the finest relationships I have today. And this is where my insanity's at today, when I think I don't need to improve that one relationship. After all I've been given for almost 23 years in this thing, all the richness and things that's in my life today, I'm a damn fool if I don't try to improve that relationship with Him. Absolute. That's the insanity that I can experience today. Anytime I think that your cross is bigger than mine, or God loves you more than He does me, and all that sort of junk, that's pure insanity for me today. I told you that... I better shut up here. I told you that the program was about fulfilling your dreams. I do not have a dream that hadn't been fulfilled since I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you I quit school when I was in the seventh grade. I was always embarrassed by that. I hated it when you would ask me, did I have any formal education? I was always well read. That's what I did in Crete for 18 months. I like to drove the librarian nuts. But that saved me on several occasions. But in any event, my brother had a degree from the University of Kentucky, and I certainly wanted one all my life. And so this old man told me one day down at the club, same one, hey, dummy, come here. And I said, oh, God, what this time? He says...
You either do something about the college thing or you shut up. I don't want to hear any more of it around here. There's only two kinds of people in AA, winners and whiners. And that's what he was telling me. We're going to let you whine for a little while, boy, but then shut it up. And I sang our national anthem. I said, but you don't understand. And he says, what don't I understand? I says, I don't have a high school diploma. He says, good, dummy. That's where you get to start. One thing I know about alcoholics for sure, they always want to start from where they ain't. Guarantee it. I never knew one of them in my life that didn't want to start from where. That's where I had to go get the diploma, the equivalency. I had to go to the university. I had to take some tests. Takes 4 years to get a degree. Got a degree in art. That's what I wanted it in. Need 12, 14 hours for a degree in sociology. Don't want it. The dream's been fulfilled. Wanted to own an antique shop. Owned two or three of them. Still losing money in that business. The dream's been fulfilled. Wanted to be an auctioneer. I am an auctioneer. Been one for years. The dream's been fulfilled. When I was a little kid, I told you, I came from a very poor family. We finally stole a tent somewhere and went down and spent the summer on the Kentucky River. I was never so impressed or felt such awe and serenity. I don't even like that word. But anyhow, as I did sitting there at night on that sand, watching and hearing that river, God, it impressed me. I just love the sound of that water. I never forgot it. I'm even happy on a troop ship. Show you what water does to me. In any event, I always wanted to live on the water. Was never able to. And we were taking a crippled lady to meetings, Alberta and I were. And we were in our usual state of missing or lacking of funds. And this girl heard us talking about we was going to have to move. And she says, why don't you see so-and-so? She wants to sell her house. And I just quick deeded the house, so I had no credit. And I told her that, and Alverna says, we'll check on it. Anyhow, I says, well, I can't get any credit, you know, and this and that. I'm whining. And she says, we'll find out about it. And sure enough, she went and talked to the lady, and somehow the deposit got turned up from somewhere, and somehow the lady wanted to finance her herself, and there wasn't any credit needed or anything like that. And where do you think the house is at? It's on a lake. Of course it is. You don't think the God of my understanding would put me somewhere else? Huh? No. Bring your dreams to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bring them drunken dreams here and let's find out about them. But remember, there's always something. You know, there ain't no free lunch and ain't none in AA either. An honest application of these 12 steps is what it takes. That's how these dreams come true. So my life's been exciting. This is exciting. God's exciting. Get a big God. I see too many people with little gods. Get a big God. Real big one, really. Get one with a sense of humor. Yeah, get a guy with a sense of humor. I was finished up selling, working some antique shows, and I had some display cases going. And I wanted to get rid of them. I was going up to Mount Dora to sell some other junk that I had. And I looked up and I says, don't forget, God, I don't want to bring these cases back. And so I put them on the truck, and I drove up to Mount Dora, and I wheeled in my parking place, and I went around to unload and just busted out laughing. They'd blown off on the way up there. What am I going to tell you? Huh? So this has been an exciting time for me. This has been a fun time. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of richness in my life. There's a lot of freedom in my life. Huh? There's a lot of excitement. There's a challenge of that new tomorrow and the new dreams and new hopes. Because if you don't have new dreams and new hopes, don't bother to pray tonight, folks. Don't bother to. But all those things are in my life today. But do you know, with all that richness, with all the love, with all the excitement, with all the freedom, the challenge of that new tomorrow, new dreams and new hopes, I better remember one thing. They'll all be taken away with a single drink. Thank you.